Lost in Rhode Island.
My name is Alon.
Alon Danziger. I heard about a man. He's a good man.
Right across the studio from me. His name is Jimmy Hoffman.
Is this an intro? Because I'm going to change the accent halfway through.
It's time to get embarrassed with us. Do that ever again. We're going
to
try.
I keep trying to go down the rabbit hole, and I don't feel like we're coming up with anything good.
I will go down that rabbit hole with you. After all, it is our 40th episode, so welcome if you are joining us for the first time. We're glad you're here with us, and if you've been one of our many dedicated listeners, or the few dedicated listeners, realistically,
then
thank you for being here.
There's a handful.
Joining us in the studio for our 40th episode is longtime collaborator, former Lost in Rwanda producer, and still current awesome dude, friend extraordinaire, Doug Johnson.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Alon. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Pleasure to be back in the studs.
Yeah.
With the used dudes.
Yeah.
It's good to have you.
Oh, my goodness. It's a kind of a reunion. I know Melissa Lloyd wanted to come and be here, too, and unfortunately a work obligation interfered, so she will not be able to make it, but hopefully by the end of season three, before the season wraps, she'll be back, and you'll get to come back as well, so we can do this.
That would be very nice.
Cameo.
It has been a while. I didn't know that you guys did in accent cold opens now.
We're going to have to try a little harder with our intro quality next time.
I mean, it'll be one of those things that we'll go, hey, do you remember that episode where we did the really awful accents at the start, and then that'll be our way we can place it in time.
Well, yeah, sure.
That's a good point. I was wondering if it could become a thing where you did a different accent every time, but I don't know how long it would take before you just run out of them completely.
No, we got plenty.
I've heard a lot of Jimmy accents, so there are many, many a different introduction that we can come up with.
So many voices we could be doing.
And I just, we'll go a little Godfather. It's okay.
If we want to make sure that it did.
You be the Marlon Brando, I'll be the Ray Liotta. I don't know.
Where was that? I mean, what movie is that? And how was that Ray Liotta?
That's a cross of Goodfellas and Godfather, I think. Godfellas.
Yeah, exactly.
Truth be told.
He's my good father.
Hybrid Italian mobster films, basically. Doing like Carlito.
Casino's way?
Exactly. Donnie Brasco's way.
Yes. I mean, we've got to do. I want to make all the mafia movies and then just make them Jewish. I feel like that would be the best way to do it. And just say, like, yeah, you didn't. Meyer Lansky was just the beginning.
When I was younger, I had a godfather. Everybody was like, how do you have a godfather? You're Jewish. The only people who have godfathers are Italian. I'm like, that's pretty much not the way it is, I'm sure.
So the fairy godmother's like, I'm going to put a hit out. I got it on the Wicked Witch. Make sure you catch her, you know, with a house. I want to drop a house on her.
Wait, so neither of you had godparents at all?
Wait.
Fairy godparents.
I did.
You did?
It was just like my aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, if my parents died, they'd take care of me or something.
Yeah.
I think that's what Godfather's for.
It is what they are for.
I want to take care of you.
It is a very awesome occasion that Doug is here because he has some music to play for us.
He brought the good stuff.
He brought some mixes. These are all mixes. Doug is a very, very seasoned DJ. He has been a DJ for the entire time I've known him. You've been nothing short of...
They're my initials, in fact.
They are your initials. What is the DJ name you go by?
Right now, I use J July.
How did you come up with that name?
I forget the full definition, but Jejune is like devoid of color or flavor. Like, so J July would be next.
That wasn't your
whatever would be next.
That wasn't your original DJ name, right?
No, I used to use Jive Alive, which is based on the fruit drink.
The
Five Alive.
Five Alive, the orange juice, right?
Yes.
Dude,
I think orange is one of the five.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't know what the other five are. But I always liked their logo and thought it was cool, and I liked switching it, using the logo for stuff.
When you were in college with me, or when I was in college with you, when we were listening to a lot of underground hip-hop, and you had a much more mature palate than I did because you had been listening to rap and hip-hop for much longer than I had at that point.
That's nothing to brag about. Gotcha. I was at home by myself listening to things, you know.
Yeah. And, you know,
and so then there was a fat beat, dude.
The way that underground rap fans do.
Mm-hmm.
That is how underground
hungering or did, I guess.
Hungering down, being backpackers, I guess, or not backpackers. I don't know. Some people didn't have backpacks. Maybe they had messenger bags. Yeah,
well, it was easy to be a backpacker when you were in school.
It's true.
Because you just had one, and then you put a JanSport on your back with a dictionary in it, and you're there.
Did you have a backpack full of records when you were in high school?
I think I had a record bag. I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
But I started DJing and buying records when I was 16.
Right.
So I assume I would have carried them around in something.
Well, sure. When you got to college, it was important that you had the structure and the space to be able to, you know, work on your skills without any disturbance.
I guess that was important. One of the nice things about the spacious dormitories of Ithaca College, where you could take over one of the common areas.
This
is
true.
Just, like, take all your stuff there and set up turntables, what have you.
Did the RAs ever get upset at you?
I don't think so.
And now firmly positioned.
No, I don't think my RAs ever got mad at me for that. My freshman RA was at a party that I was DJing, and he offhandedly said to me, "Man, the quality of DJs has really gone down since I was a freshman." And I was like, "You're a dickhead, man."
Wow. That's like a really pointed insult.
Yeah, it was a pretty good burn. And it was a good party, too.
Yeah.
Like, people were having fun.
You started DJing parties pretty quickly then when you got to school.
I guess, sure.
The first party that you DJed was something of a, not frat party per se, but like just a party in someone's dorm or whatever, just...
Yeah, probably just playing records for fun.
Yeah.
Or a house party, a home party, depending on what your home was.
Sure.
But I did that in high school, too, when I was like a mobile DJ. So I played like junior high school dances and skating rinks and stuff like that before college.
Any place with merriment?
Yeah, basically.
Did you like making mixes when even before you started becoming more of a record DJ, like on tape or CD or whatever?
Yeah, definitely tape. We had a lot of tapes. My uncle was in a band, so I had all of his tapes, and I like had tapes of my dad's from the radio in the 70s and stuff. I liked taping stuff off the radio, especially the DJ mixes, before I got into doing it myself. So I would... tape those and then like listen to them again in the morning on the way to school, because it was better than whatever was on the radio in the morning. Like the mix shows were just, I preferred them to morning talk radio, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean,
except for the wake up workout on 92Q, which was a house music mix.
Shout out to 92Q.
Yeah, it was a Baltimore club music mix that they did every morning for 15 minutes. And it was a great ride to school.
You are probably one of the only people I know who to this day is still a source of information about the Baltimore house scene.
There was recently a good Wax Poetics article about the origins of it and some of the more famous songs. And in there, there's a link to a YouTube channel that just had all the songs. So look up the Wax Poetics Baltimore Club Music article. It was great.
These were all local music flavors that influenced more or less your way of thinking as a DJ and like how to mix stuff that keeps people on their feet and not necessarily satisfies the music taste that you like, that you have?
No, I would say I did the complete opposite of that for a long time. The stuff I played was either rap or things I bought intention to sample them into rap songs.
Sure.
So there wasn't a lot of things that people knew. I played a lot of obscura and things that I liked. And rarely did that go over well, unless I was playing one of those kind of mobile DJ gigs where I knew it was a dance party at a place where I knew nobody, where I was like, they're providing a service. People weren't coming because I was doing it.
We have just a quick sample of a transition from one of your early mixes that you so kindly gave me back in the day.
Yeah, and should we say what these are? Like, these are like CDs of mixtapes?
Yeah, well, I mean,
Nick CDs that I gave you in college.
You've contributed tapes in the past, so you get a pass that it's not a tape. But, you know, we talk about old media and specifically focus on tapes. And if it's a CD, I mean, I think we can give you the benefit of the doubt.
I don't know.
But I did feel like it was a good idea just to, in so much as listening to the kind of stuff you're mixing now, mm-hmm. hear the kind of stuff you were mixing in college.
Sure, sure.
So let's take a listen.
Devil worshipping horses, sex, human sacrifices, cannibalism, candles and exorcism, animals having sex with them, camels, mammals and rabbits, but I don't get into that, I kick the habit, I just beat you to death with weapons that eat you to flesh, and I never eat you unless the fucking meat looks fresh. I got a lion in my pocket, I'm lying, I got a nine in my pocket, and baby I'm just dying to cock him, he's ready for war, I'm ready for war, I got machetes and swords for anything, I ever said he was raw, my Uzi's heavy as yours, yeah you met me before. I just didn't have as large an arsenal of weapons before. Marshal, step in the door. I lay your head on the floor. With your body spread on the bedspread. Red on the wall. Red on the ceiling. Red on the floor. Get a new whore. Met on the second. Red on the third. Then she's dead on the fourth. I'm dead wrong.
You got it going on. You're dead wrong.
You're big. You're dead wrong.
Several different levels of picking up shovels and dumping you in ditches on the sea level. Frontin' you can witness. Let me refresh you, sick, and tell you my position in this beef. Leave you under Venice. Opposition finish. Here it is. We invaded, created a pyramid of a haven of names. So blame Dre and that era is. So breathe. I'd rather reach for your neck and I never heat you for respect unless you greet me with less. I got a skunk in my trunk. I'm lying. I got a pump in my trunk. You dying. How many lumps? Niggas want. Who's ready for y'all? We ready for y'all. We too incredibly raw for any artist that said he would draw. I stand firm.
It's so seamless, man. Killing it.
Trying. I actually, maybe not that one, but something on this tape or this CD, I definitely recorded onto tape at some point because I wanted to scratch over top of a blend. So
right.
I think I recorded it onto tape and then played the tape out of my boombox or whatever and then back through the mixer and into the computer so that I could scratch over the mix that I'd already done because it was only one channel recording on the computer.
As I tend to say with a lot of things on the show, it sounds really industrious because you're utilizing all different mechanisms and just keeping everything all in one to include it all as a way to extend to see just what kind of sounds you can make.
Sure, yeah, and I was also like impersonating things that I'd heard before, sound bombing too. The Sway and King Tech radio show, This or That,
mm-hmm.
mix CD with DJ Revolution.
Okay.
That was awesome stuff. And one of the things that was interesting about that to me, and I didn't understand how to do, was there was scratching over top of the blending of two songs. And I was like, how did they do that? And that was before I was in school for recording.
Right.
And understood that you could record multiple tracks of things. So I was like, well, I'll just record this and then I'll play it back and record like layer stuff on top of it. And that was how I'd get that aspect of it done. The only thing that really stood out to me from the thing you just played, the clip, was that I mixed from a Raphael Sadiq and D'Angelo song
mm-hmm.
into Eminem's verse from Dead Wrong,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because it's not smooth R&B, but like it's a very romantic song, I guess you would say.
Right.
Directly into something that's very specifically
vulgar.
About murdering people.
Right. Dead Wrong is Biggie.
Yes. And it was from the Born Again album, I think was the name of it.
And Eminem has a verse on that. Or
yeah,
is it
like
just
the
a
whole
remix?
I think the whole concept of that album was that it was partial songs of his. And so it was like all collabs. So yeah, Eminem had like the feature verse at the end. Then it goes into the original version of Renegades with Eminem and Royce the 5'9",
mm-hmm.
where Royce the 5'9"'s verse is very similar, and I can't recall which one came first and whether he was referencing the one Eminem did, or vice versa. Royce the 5'9" had the great line, "I'll turn your chest hair into taco meat."
I've actually had women say, "Call my chest hair taco meat," before. I had no idea what it was.
What?
Yeah, she goes,
"That's
hey,
gross."
She goes, "Hey, you got that taco meat?" I was just like, "Yeah, exactly. Thank you for ruining my day."
You must have really gotten into the Eminem really early on then. By this point, you were playing all the obscure stuff.
Born Again, that was like a hit when I was in high school.
Sure.
Like, people talked about that. I did hear of him a little bit early, but nothing crazy. He did like a freestyle on the Cali Kings mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that he opens it up by shouting out Thurston Howell III and Wordsworth. And I was like, well, I have to go figure out who these guys are. And, like, that was how I found out about Raucous Records and stuff.
Right.
Was looking up who Thurston Howell III was and not finding Gilligan's Island.
Rap music is clearly something that fleshed out your music taste into now. How much rap do you listen to now?
I still listen to it a lot, but I feel like I'm too old to be keeping up with the kids in a sort of a way with it. I'm an old man in that way at this point, where I just, like, keeping up with it is fun for me, but it's a personal thing, and I don't care anymore about being an evangelist for the best rap songs you never heard. The effort of keeping up with it was amazing and fun when I had all the free time in the world as a high school and college student with vacations to go on.
Sure.
And summer breaks and the like. I don't have that time anymore. And the time I do have, I'd rather spend doing stuff with my wife or like seeing my friends instead of poring over the internet reading Official Hip Hop Lyrics Archive and things like that. Or I guess suppose now it would be Genius rather than
right.
I was wondering, do you think that rappers hear like their colleagues? And I know that they don't call that like other rappers call their colleagues.
They might. I don't know.
It's my favorite. It's my best colleagues, man. Do you think that they like will hear their rap and not understand what they say sometimes and then go look up the lyrics afterwards?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, how could you not?
And be like, oh, I gotta hit up AZ Lyrics, man. I gotta make sure. I got what he was saying there.
Yeah, they're people just like us.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I do it all the time, so that's one thing I always wondered about.
Ola used to be my jam. I loved going on that site, but Rap Genius has kind of taken that share of the market, and they give you such scrupulous details.
Yeah, the annotation is wild.
It's crazy. It's
almost unnecessary.
Well, a lot of things are like, going down to the store, pour a 40 out. Like, that doesn't need
ounces of malt liquor.
40 ounces of malt liquor are usually poured out to represent a loss that occurs when someone dies.
It's a big up to all of his said homies.
I push my glasses up and say, and there's your answer.
The more you know.
There's stuff like that on there. There's also some interesting commentary on stuff.
Definitely.
I don't spend that much time on it because I'll develop my own thoughts about what they said, even if I don't understand it.
There was a rap line. I'm trying to remember if it was on a Pete Rock album. And he said, "Popped out of the sunroof like a cinnamon bagel." And I always wondered what he's talking about.
That's pretty good.
I know, it's like my favorite line in the song.
Was it Pete Rock that said that?
No, it was someone else.
Okay. What album was it? Do you remember the name?
On New York's Finest.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, if anyone out there knows.
Was New York's Finest the same album that had the 914 track with Styles P?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I'm familiar with the album, but not the song.
It's a great album, yeah. But
it's funny.
I just remember hearing that line and thinking to myself, like, even every time I hear the song, I'm questioning. And I think that's a fun thing about rap. It sometimes kind of leaves you like, exactly what was he getting at? Because it is the newest and most acceptable form of poetry.
Yeah, and you could write something that had some mystery to it on purpose, or you could write something that was very explicit and clear. And both things were possible and intermingled. And I liked going from something that I understood and made a lot of sense into something that was abstract and far away. A metaphor, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes. I wonder, like, how did... I didn't mean to cut you off there, buddy.
No. No cutting. Go ahead.
I was going to say...
paste it.
I mean, at one point in long ago in history, rappers evolved from bards. Right?
This is
like,
true.
At one point, there was a minister like...
And now we got mumble rap.
And then at one point, he was just like, yeah, I'm gonna drop this guitar and get this, like... We got all this equipment now. It's just, like, to me, it's such an interesting thing, like... And that, even at the time, very cool people. Everybody thought they were pretty chill.
Going to rap shows, you being a DJ, Doug, obviously, mm-hmm. The idea of being in a live setting for understanding what makes the audience tick, do you still like to go as a spectator?
I still like going to shows. If I have the opportunity to see someone that I like in a smaller than massive venue. Absolutely. I don't follow a lot of people who would be playing a Madison Square Garden.
Sure.
That wouldn't appeal to me really. Saw Edan and Peyton Locke at Baby's All Right.
Nice.
And that was awesome.
I'm glad Edan is still around.
Still wearing the wig.
Oh,
still
man.
Cutting up two turntables with one hand, holding the mic with the other. That's great.
That Boston stuff, man, right?
He's actually from Maryland.
I mean, oh, really?
He went to art school in Boston.
Yeah. Doug got me into Edan in freshman year, and ever since then I've been a lifelong Edan fan. Going and seeing Edan live was a trip. I think I've only seen him once, and he was with Insight out in San Francisco at the Red Room.
Awesome.
And then I remember seeing Jay Live, too, a number of times, who was very good to watch. Over at the Lion's Den, I think, was the first time. Shout out to Lewis Logic, who I also saw for the first time there, and he was on the show in our former iteration of Lost and Rewound. Yeah, I mean, going to live shows for me now, I don't know about you, Jimmy. For me, it's more just like supporting friends. And if they happen to be rappers, then so be it.
I've never seen rap in a live venue ever before.
Seriously?
Yeah. I've only seen rock music live.
What about a rap show does not appeal to
you? Rock?
What about that in Living Color?
Oh, my God. Thank goodness I never got to see Linkin Park. And I used to absolutely love them. And that's when you think about the dark years of your childhood.
I never really got into Linkin Park, ever.
I don't know what you'd call them. Linkers? Parkies?
LPers? Parkies? I was always confused as to how the whole Jay-Z mashup thing ever came about. That always frustrated me.
Oh, my
me.
God, yeah.
I don't know about this. Tell me.
You really don't? You never heard about that?
No.
Jay-Z, Limp Bizkit? Limp Bizkit, I'm sorry.
Linkin Park,
Jay-Z,
yeah.
Jay-Z, Linkin Park, yeah.
No, I don't know about this.
I think I blacked it out, but I definitely remember it.
Remember when everybody was remixing the Black Album?
Yeah, that was a fun week. I had the Gray Album, and I think the Brown Album.
Brown album,
both
Kev Brown.
Vinyl.
Yeah,
I had the Turquoise album.
Nice. Was that Turquoise Jeep?
Yeah, I was just thinking Turquoise Jeep. That is another great rap group.
Wait, what?
You don't know Turquoise Jeep, dude? Are you serious?
I'm not familiar with Turquoise
Jeep.
Oh,
man, that's gonna make your evening if you got YouTubes.
I will have to YouTubes it when I get home.
What's the first one you should watch? Because you got to like start it off right.
Schmang?
That's what I was going to say.
Schmang?
Let me smang it.
Linkin Park had an album where they interpolated their songs with verses. So Encore and Numb, for example, were their own song, and it was just like a hybrid.
Okay. No, I never heard that edition of the Black Album with Linkin Park.
Bringing it full circle to my obsession with karaoke of years past, I'm familiar with the fact that they don't have Encore by Jay-Z in the book, but they do have Encore by Jay-Z and Linkin Park in the book.
Oh, that's funny.
You should definitely do that the next time you go.
Nope.
That'd be a...
No, please.
That'd be a hard song to do yourself, like to sing. Does it have the Linkin Park
parts
in it too?
Yeah,
like, yeah, that'd be hard to do both.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's why there's two guys. That's why it's not one guy doing it.
We were talking about the different Black Album variations before. I like the White Album. Cunning Linguist, DJ No. I believe that was DJ No who did the White Album. But yeah, every color of the rainbow had a mix, basically. You still have an interest in DJing and playing gigs now because you have all this new stuff that you're working on.
Sure. I mean, it's mostly about keeping up with buying records. It's fun. If you don't have an outlet for it, what's the point if you're just buying records to stick on a shelf? I suppose there are people out there who really enjoy that, but I like playing them for people.
Did you stop for a while?
Yeah, when I moved here from Chicago, I was playing twice a year, I guess. I left a bunch of records in Chicago in order to make the move because they're heavy. And also, while I was in Chicago, I was DJing at Q4,
mm-hmm.
at the art gallery.
Yep.
And my records were in the basement. And the basement flooded.
Oh.
So many of the sleeves, many of the labels, and a few records were just, like, ruined. So I had to, like, repack them into blank sleeves, and they became, like, a total pain to carry around. And, like, I still have some that aren't in anything. They just have paper towels in between them so they don't scratch on each other. Going through them and, like, getting them together to go play a gig wasn't as fun. It was, like, a mess all the time. I was worried about breaking them and stuff. Collecting records costs money.
This is true.
And
keeping up with
American pesos.
And living in New York costs money. So
also
you put the two of them together, and I didn't have money for records or the motivation was not there, because every 6 months I'd go out and play somewhere and I'd be like, oh, I remember why I don't do this more often. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
DJing at places is often awful.
But then July got his groove back somehow.
It was mostly the money and spare time. Mm. I got a job where I got to kind of keep my weekends, so I could spend some of my weekends buying records. I don't have extra room, still being in New York in a relatively small apartment. So it was like, well, if I'm going to be collecting records again and trying to DJ again, I need to like keep it to a small clip so that it's not just like growing out of control and I have to like get a storage space for records or something. Which I think when I left Chicago, I had 16 or so crates of records and had to like pare it down to like 8.
Yeah.
That I eventually brought with me and I gave away a lot. And
that's crazy, dude.
Donated a lot.
You can fit, what, like 50 records per crate probably?
80 or so.
Like I said. that's tremendous.
I think it was 80 or so. I could be wrong. But it was, yeah, it was a lot. I didn't need all that. And it had a lot of stuff in it that I bought hoping there'd be good things to sample on it. And there wasn't. And I hadn't just gotten rid of them. So cut off a lot of dead weight. To circle back, continuing to buy records without it growing out of control, I made this rule for myself that I was only allowed to buy one a week. And wherever I was, if I found two that I wanted, I had to pick one. Or if I was just like, I have to get all of these, then I had to stretch. Like I couldn't buy another one next week because I'd bought two the week before.
And the impetus of that is what we're actually going to be hearing in a little bit. You're going to mix some stuff for us.
Sure. Based on what I was saying earlier about my older style of just playing hip-hop records that I liked and not caring so much if what other people liked, I tried to focus a little bit more on playing the hits, and that means a lot fewer rap records. So I'm not doing so much blending in new stuff, just playing songs in a more radio-like format that you could play at a party or a bar where people aren't there to judge how well you're mixing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like going to see Beat Junkies or something to that effect where,
sure,
like the mixing is what's on showcase. It's more about the selection.
When you began this project, you started doing it as posts on Instagram.
Yeah, I also wanted to have like whenever you go talk to a bar owner or something, the first thing they say is, well, send me a mix. And if you don't have one, what do you send? So I was like, well, if I just am buying these records and posting a hot 15 seconds of it on Instagram and then making like a Spotify playlist, I can just send that. That was fun and worked for a while until I had enough where I could actually make a mix of some kind where I didn't only have 15 records to pick from.
Right.
You know?
How many records are you going to play for us for this go around?
Well, I thought I'd just play like the first half hour of the first mix, if that fits into the time. I brought the whole thing, and we'll just play as much as we have time for.
Great.
The whole thing's on Mixcloud. I'm Snaps and Hooks on Mixcloud, and my Instagram is also Snaps and Hooks, which was the DJ night we had back in Chicago.
Doug Johnson on Lost and Rewound here. We'll be back in a little bit, and we're definitely excited to hear Doug mixing it up here in the studio for Radio Free Brooklyn. Take a listen. Back in a bit. Dum, da-dum, da-da-da.
Oh my darling, yeah. she wouldn't dance with another.
It old school there, clearly.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's been kind of the fun of this, is finding the old hits and not concentrating on, oh, I bet no one's ever heard of this. Kind of trying to buy songs I like that other people like, too. Yeah.
What was the name of that last band?
Oh, that was the Beatles, and I think the cause of the English accents at the beginning of the episode.
In no way.
To bring it all the way back.
Yeah, seriously, there's foreshadowing, I suppose.
So it's like, was there ever a photograph of them dressed as bugs playing music? Beatles, right?
I hope so.
It better be, or it's just, it's terrible false advertising.
That song was off of this, I guess it's like a really early greatest hits compilation.
Introducing the Beatles.
Well, it's actually on this, the Beatles, England's number one vocal group. and it's like, it seems like it's like their greatest hits from year one, sort of, like how many hits could they have had?
35.
But yeah, but I came across it at a Housing Works, and it was incredibly lucky because I go there pretty much every week.
I was going to say, where do you go to grab your finds?
I try to go to lots of places. Apparently all the record stores are in Greenpoint now. So that was, I actually, last weekend I did like a big circle, went to a bunch of them. It was fun. But the two I go to most often are the Housing Works and the Goodwill in my neighborhood.
Cool.
Because they're right across the street from the laundromat. So I put my laundry in and then go look at the records and then come back.
It's like New Orleans. You go and get a po' boy and do some laundry in this case.
Well, there's a New Orleans-themed restaurant right across the street. I could do exactly that if I wanted to.
Get a po' boy.
Yeah, it's usually more of an espresso and go look at the records. So I was in the Housing Works, and it was totally picked through. And I was like, oh, well, this is a bummer. And then there was a box, a sealed box of records. And I had to find the manager and ask if I could open the box. And they like went and asked somebody else. And they were like, yeah, I guess. And I opened it up and Goldmine. It was crazy. Goldmine, not mined.
Goldmine.
And so it was that Beatles record and Help and the soundtrack to A Hard Day's Night. And Johnny Cash Live at Folsom Prison, and Reefer Songs, which is this awesome Stash Records compilation of songs about marijuana.
That's amazing.
From like the 30s. Like it's all ragtime and jazz songs. It's awesome.
That is amazing.
And lots of other good stuff that was in there, but it just blew my mind. And actually, I think the first song I played too, the Linda Scott, Every Little Star, was on this compilation that was called like Leaders of the Pack, and it was all songs like that, of like early rock and kind of doo-wop-y sort of thing.
Yeah, that I dug that a lot. I was going to ask you, like when you're getting a record, this has always been my issue with going crate digging, because I always crate dig a little bit here and there, and I...
Always a little bit. I mean, you gotta a little bit.
For a while, I sort of did it with the intention of one day listening to it, and then eventually I did, because I did get a record player, but for a while I didn't, so I was just accruing, materialistically accruing this stuff without any way of hearing it. I don't know, it was really sad, because eventually I would get a chance to hear some of these records after thinking, this is gonna be great, and it's all scratched up. And that has always been my weakness, is that I sort of blindly will take this stuff, knowing that there's so much stuff out there, and you see all this great picks of the litter, and then you're thinking, well, does it actually work? Can you actually hear it?
Will it blend?
Will it blend? Will it actually be skipping, or am I?
Well, you got to be that guy. And no one looks cool when they're like looking at the record to like see if it's straight and like checking the grooves. Like you look like, I don't know, some like Dr. Evil or Dr. Claw, kind of like, I don't know, just like my precious sort of thing.
Wasn't Dr. Claw, I'll get you, Gadget.
Yeah, but he's always petting the cat, which is what I was thinking of, like my precious pretty or
Gadget,
whatever.
I'll get you, Gadget. I'll get you, Gadget.
Exactly. That's the guy. Dr. Claw.
Where did he get his doctorate?
The doctor of evil sciences, but like the real deal evil sciences.
This is what they talk
world
about.
World domination.
Yeah, this is like Austin Powers. They explain that, right?
Okay, world domination.
That was Dr.
sciences.
Evil.
Yes. Yeah, but they explain where he gets his doctorate at Evil Medical School, right?
Exactly.
I don't remember that one. Was that from the third one?
No, I think that was the first one.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I don't remember.
It's all good. That movie's too quotable.
I'm not being purposely aloof. I just don't remember.
You're being purposely
aloof? No, I said I'm not being.
I am aloof 100% of the time. So you cannot be more aloof than me. It's all good. Yeah, exactly. Aloof is my middle name.
Aloof
Permitten.
Exactly. I'm here with Aloof Danziger.
Let's take a listen to more of what you got. Damn it! I want to check it out.
Whoa, bro! Did you need to take it there?
I needed to. I'm dying for some records, for some wax.
I'm dying for it.
Next one was not a vintage find at all. It was new in the package, but it's from Take It From the Man, the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Lord, you know it ain't right to live my life this way. I gotta stay up every night and feel this feeling till it goes away. You know I had my crimes and I paid my due. I seen the best of times, I had the best of friends, I played it all to lose. But now I seen the light, I'm gonna show it to you. You gotta lay right down, you gotta close your eyes and let it go right through you. Change my mind, don't know what I was thinking. But now I've seen the light, I'm gonna give it to you. We'll be right back.
that you'll be true. Lies, lies, that's all I ever get from you. Tears, tears, I shed a million tears for you. Tears, tears, and now you're loving someone new. Someday I'm gonna be happy, but I don't know when just now. Lies, lies, it's a break of my heart. You think that you're such a smart girl, and I'll believe what you say. Who do you think you are, girl, to lead me on this way? Hey, lies, lies, I can't believe a word you say. Lies, lies, I'm gonna make you sad someday. Someday I'm gonna be happy, but I won't know when just now. Lies, lies, the break of my heart. Break of my heart. You think that you're such a smart girl, and I'll believe what you say. But who do you think you are, girl, to lead me on this way? Hey, lies, lies, I can't believe a word you say. Lies, lies, I'm gonna make you sad someday. Someday break of my heart, break of my heart, break of my heart. Break of my heart.
I dug it.
Oh yes.
Cool.
Gary Lewis and the Playboys?
Yes. Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
I don't know anything about Gary Lewis and the Playboys.
I didn't either. I bought this.
I'm gonna be a terrible DJ. And that was a group that I don't know anything about.
Jerry Lewis, it's Gary Lewis.
That's fine, because I picked it. You don't have to know what it is if
it's
I
true.
Picked it. That's not your obligation.
But you didn't know anything about them before getting that record.
No, I didn't. I bought it because I liked the cover. I didn't like most of it. And it's one of those situations where you skip through the whole thing and you're like, oh, this was a bummer of a buy, kind of like you were describing, of like waiting to listen to something later and then realizing that you don't actually like it or want it. But then that song, Lies, is the very last song on the record, and it's the one that wasn't written by the team that wrote the rest of the record.
Who was it written by?
Of course, I would have to look it up. I'm not sure. But that's actually...
Buddy Randell.
Nice job, buddy.
I read the label.
Nice.
Yeah.
Man, oh man, this guy's got talent.
Mm-hmm. Readership. Writing creds of Gary Lewis and the Playboys is actually kind of interesting, because after I bought this, I saw that documentary, The Wrecking Crew. I think it's on Netflix, about the studio musicians who played on everything. And Gary Lewis and the Playboys were one of the acts for whom Wrecking Crew filled in and like played instruments. And then the band went on tour and like had to learn how to play the songs the same way the Wrecking Crew played them.
So sure.
I think that they wrote the songs or knew how to play them beforehand, but couldn't do it as well as the Wrecking Crew in the studio. And studio time costs money, so they would get replaced and then be bummed that they weren't playing their own songs on their own record.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks for them. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, and the song you played before was?
We talked about that.
Yeah.
That was Brian Jonestown.
That was the Brian Jonestown.
Subject of a documentary, the classic Dig.
Yes. And we concluded that song is definitely about drugs.
I mean, it seems like it. They say "Let Me In You" a lot, and I'm based on things that are happening in the documentary Dig about them doing heroin and whatnot. I would imagine that that's what it's about, but I can't say
that
for sure.
They could have been talking about an enlightened. No.
You've already said it too much. Enlightenment and drugs are synonymous with each other, right? Let me ask you this. You've obviously, in your history of being a DJ, you've had records in the idea of sampling them. With this project, or at least with the records that you get for your recent finds, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily in the mindset of sampling them like you did in previous years.
No, not really. I haven't been making my own music in a long time, mainly because the equipment I liked using software and the laptop that I had with all the software on it is dead. Mm-hmm. Got some liquid spilled on it. Doesn't really work so good.
This is the future we live in right now.
Yeah, I know, right? So just been DJing more. And if I find something that like I'm like, oh, I want to sample that, I'll try to power up the old laptop and tilt the screen just right and get it to do what it does. But now it's just more of a hobby, aside whenever I get the time kind of thing.
We have time for another set. Do you have anything you want to lead into the first song?
This is my wife's favorite song from the mix.
Shout out to Kate.
Yeah, love Kate. Naturally. She's my wife.
As you would. It's my wife.
Oh, boy. She is a huge Beach Boys fan, and I think I played Little Honda from this Beach Boys compilation, and she was like, that's a terrible pick. There's much better songs on here. And I was like, you're right. You're smarter than me. You win.
Let's take a listen.
Love you.
See how my arms are missing you. your trouble is, baby, you need someone like me by your side.
Everybody needs love.
Yeah, red beans and rice.
That's cooking it. With love, I suppose. Yeah, it was a Gladys Knight and the Pips. Everybody needs love.
You had a CD a while back. I loved called the Get Right Swing Edition. And
yeah.
I was put onto so many good songs because of that album. Songs that to this day I'm still like humming to myself. If you want to explain exactly what it was and how you came about doing that mix.
Yeah, that was a fun one to make. And I actually did some blending on that. And the two most recent that I've put out, I'm not doing any blending on it at all, just making sure the order is right.
Mm-hmm.
That came out of buying songs to sample, or buying things hoping that there'd be samples on them, and buying like Tony Bennett and stuff like that, and then just being like, oh, these are cool songs, but there's nothing to sample. And then eventually I just had such a huge collection of like swing and 60s pop, and I referred to it as, I think, like Tarantino soundtrack fodder.
Like, someone get murdered to this, so they could start up a drug empire to this music.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was like swingy, but also like kind of edgy. And I was like, there's a thing to this, and it wasn't like Cherry Pop and Daddy's,
oh,
like
God.
Brian Setzer kind
no.
of swing. Like,
No.
Like band leader kind of stuff from way back when.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of mixing on there. Mainly, I think I believe that Guru's Jazzmatazz song with
that
Erykah
stood
Badu.
Out. That stood out.
And that was easy to mix because it was to a metronome, and many of the other things weren't.
We have to wrap up in a little bit, but if in case you haven't heard before, this is our 40th episode of Lost and Rewound, and Doug Johnson, our esteemed guest for this go-around, in the studio with us playing records. You could hear the entirety of one record a week from the Mixcloud page. His username is Snaps and Hooks, and also follow him on Instagram, Snaps and Hooks. Doug Johnson is a gentleman and a scholar and one hell of a DJ, and it's good to have him here for this sort of mini-reunion. We'll have to have him back again soon.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show, sir.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Radio Free Brooklyn. I love it here.
I love
this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You the
yeah.
man. We'll be back in a little bit for some house cleaning. Lost and Rewound.
Sweep it up. A fundraiser. It's happening on September 10th.
This Saturday.
That is Saturday the 10th. It's a rock concert. It's called Back to Cool. You've got all the best bands. You've got Dead Leaf Echo. You've got The Fallen Beds. You've got Drew Cutler and the Heart and Hand Band. Amos Rose. And not only that, you've got a lot of other DJs, giveaways, drinking, dancing, general merriment.
No haggis.
No, no haggis. No blood sausage.
It's $10 to get in at the door, but if you buy tickets right now, at RadioFreeBrooklyn/fundraiser, you will be able to get the tickets for $8.
I mean, that's almost $2 in savings.
That is $2. It's exactly $2 in savings.
I mean, no, but there's tax.
That's $2 that you could contribute.
Soul tax.
That's $2 that you could contribute extra to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge. That's the pledge page to keep Radio Free Brooklyn running with financial ease.
You could also send us Bazooka Joe in the mail. We accept gum.
And also, as you know, RadioFreeBrooklyn/LAR to sponsor our show, specifically $1, $2, $5, $10, any dollar that you want. Go, go.
Yes, that was like an 80s theme song for giving us money.
Here on Radio Free Brooklyn. We'll be back again next week, 3 p.m.
On the magical cloud, we coming through with the radio on my stereo, and we giving it to you. What? In the butt.
keep going.
Yeah, we got the rhyme scheme and we on the team.